years process, actually billions of years, that's how everything came to exist in the form that it is today. And so they'll say, mutations is the cause. This is how things happen. But we looked last week, and we're just briefly going to look at a few of the things that we talked about. We realized, we made the conclusion that mutations are genetic defects. They're not positive influences on things. They're broken, defective genes, defective DNA. Not one has ever been found which had positive constructive effect on an organism or which increased the complexity of an organism. So we looked at a few examples last time. We looked at these Galapagos finches, which is a simple example of natural variation within a kind. There's no new genetic information, no example of evolution here. There's a broken gene sequence. We talked about that causes one species to develop a larger beak. Sometimes that's an advantage. But it's broken. It's like this car we talked about. Rip the doors off, take the hoods off, make that car lighter, and in some situations, it's going to beat the other cars down to that fuel source. But it's a broken car. It's nothing new, nothing better, and that's what happens with mutation. We looked at antibiotic resistance. And this only leads to a loss of functional systems. Very clear. Evolution requires a gain of functional systems. Here again, in this particular case of antibiotic resistance, there's an enzyme that's broken that causes it so it doesn't consume the antibiotic, and therefore it survives. It's not a super bug. It's a wimpy bug that just happens to have an advantage because something's broken. That's all it is. There's no such thing as a super bug, by the way. Ask me about that later if you'd like. Okay, we looked at sickle cell anemia, the example of mutation that evolutionists give. Again, a genetic defect causes a lot of illness, has one advantage that most of those who have that disease are immune to malaria. That's a side effect. It's still a broken system of hemoglobin that functions very poorly and causes those people that have it to be quite sick sometimes. Very sick and even causing death. Evolutionists will tamper with living things sometimes, like these flies, and see if they can force evolution in some way. Here's a fly that they gave another set of wings to. Well, wasn't any advantage. This fly couldn't fly. Those back wings didn't work. They replaced a functional balancing system that was necessary for the fly to fly. So not an example of evolution. Of something that's increasing in more complex systems. And that's what we need. And then we looked at this moth, and how that it has both light and medium and dark versions of this moth, and some survive better when there's dark environments, and some survive better when it's light environments. Not even mutation involved here. This is something of existing species. And yet this is an example given for the for mutation and how it is successfully allowed creatures to survive better. Well, it's not even that an example of that. So just a few more things here. A couple of quotations from evolutionists about how they have trouble themselves with the whole idea that mutations, genetic defects, can be the driving force of evolution. Let's read a few of these. These aren't creationists who have an argument. These are evolutionists who have big concerns about the very foundation of the theory of evolution. Here's Pierre-Paul Grosse, Evolution of Living Organisms. He says, the opportune appearance of mutations permitting animals and plants to meet their needs seems hard to believe. Yet the Darwinian theory is even more demanding. A single plant, a single animal would require thousands and thousands of appropriate events, mutations. Thus, miracles would become the rule. Events with an infinitesimal probability could not fail to occur. There is no law against daydreaming, but science must not indulge in it. So, I mean, he's calling it like it is. He's saying what it really truly is that you believe in mutation, most evolutionists do, as a cause of evolution. Well, you're daydreaming. It's not science. You have no examples of this ever happening. You have no legitimate theory of how it could happen and cause all the sophisticated beings and creatures that we see. So good. I'm glad that we can see evolutionists will come. Some of them will come out and say, look, Our theory is based upon some pretty shaky ground. Here's James F. Crow, president of the Wisconsin University Medical Genetics, and so on and so on. You can read the credits there. He says, a random change in the highly integrated system of chemical processes which constitute life is certain to impair, just as random interchange of connections or wires in a television set is likely to improve the picture. Go home and try it yourself. You can experiment with the theory of evolution. You can. Just go ahead and get into the back of your TV and just start moving things around randomly and see what benefit you see. Just don't come to my house and do it, okay? Experiment on your own TV. So he's being very clear and up about that. He believes in evolution. He thinks we evolved, but he doesn't think that mutation has shown itself to be the thing that's caused or brought this about. And later we'll see that some of these people actually believe in something that's even more unrealistic than mutation. They believe what's called in the hopeful monster theory, that basically a bird laid an egg and out popped a rabbit. Now, that sounds pretty crazy, but that's what a number of evolutionists believe. They don't believe that mutations are effective in doing this. So something, hopeful monster theory, we'll talk about sometime later, but a lot of evolutionists have trouble with the mutation situation, which is what we've examined here this last week or two. Okay, Warren Weaver. Many will be puzzled about the statement that practically all known mutant genes are harmful, for mutations are necessary parts of the process of evolution. How can a good effect evolution to higher forms of life result from mutations, practically all which are harmful? And that's the whole point. You got broken things, that's going to make better things? Nah, not going to happen. Okay. Let's go on a bit. We can take all day. Here's going to finish with this one. Lynn Margulies, UMass scientist to lead debate on evolutionary theory, very much in the thick of it as far as evolution and writes books about it. He says, new mutations don't create new species. They create offspring that are impaired. He's being honest. It's refreshing. Yet, what you read, what you see, you don't see these things. These are things that are exchanged back and forth in medical and science journals that the theorist and the scientist in paleontology and genetics will write about, and they'll be honest with each other. But the television, whatever, the media, only picks up on, oh, hey, new missing link. Wow, wow, wow. Now, later on, they won't bring out the fact that, oh, no, we're wrong about that missing link. We'll see some examples of that in just a bit. But they won't come out and say that because liberal media, liberal universities don't believe in God. Many of them don't. And they promote things that substantiate a natural cause for everything. It's a doctrine. It's a doctrine, plain and simple, that they believe and that they want others to follow and believe too. Okay, Mike, sorry.
That's all right. Do any of these evolutionists comment on the fact that they're tied to a theory that's from the late 1800s?
Oh.
I mean, science and technology has marched on. Darwin didn't even have a concept of what was in a single cell.
Yeah.
He thought it was just a glob of gunk, you know, and yet it's so intricately complex. Cellular, biology is just a field all in its own, and that, how can that be comprehended by a theory that when it was theorized, the theorist didn't even know that that existed as far as what's in the cell?
Oh, it's a great point. Basically, all evolutionists know Darwin didn't figure everything out. They just credit him for the one, and he wasn't even the one who came up with the theory, but to credit him for the one who published the theory of mutation, natural selection, causing all things to come into existence. But yeah, he didn't know very much at all about, he didn't know anything about genetics. And like you say, the cell, which is a complicated mechanism, he didn't know anything about that. He thought it was, a blob of protoplasm. So no one really believes in pure Darwinism. They call it neo-Darwinism, the new version of Darwin. We've improved on his great theory, and now we've made it even better because we know more. So that's the answer. The easy answer to that one is that the basis still, Darwin is right. We've improved on it, and now it's modern. Now we have a modern theory. Okay? Moving on here. We're going to skip this one. We're going to go on to this. Okay, we've been looking at arguments by evolutionists that say mutation can cause the changes necessary for natural selection to produce something more complicated, more sophisticated. That we've disproved. Just it doesn't happen. Those are the best arguments that they have. I gave you the best ones. That's the ones that are in the textbooks, have been for years, and they don't hold up. Now we're going to switch gears, and we're going to look at the fossil record. We're going to look at guys like this. What are those things up there? Anybody know? Trilobites. Does that ring a bell? Trilobites? Maybe not. You don't have any in your backyard, unless you have fossils of them in your backyard, which is very possible because they exist in many parts of the world. This is fossilized trilobites that lived a long time ago. Of course, evolutionists will say millions of years ago. Creationists will say, well, no, they were around when the flood happened. So a few thousand years ago, they were around before the flood, and then either didn't survive the flood or became extinct like many creatures since the flood. Terry, did you have your hand up? I just saw. Oh, okay. You were pulling your sweater. Sam.
There's
no interrupting in this class. Go for it.
If you've been watching some nature shows lately, of course they haven't really found troglobites, but in the same kind of kind species, there's a lot of species out there that resemble troglobites.
Yeah,
there's a lot of sea life that is very similar to them.
Yes, there is. And in fact, I had to double check before I called this a trilobite when I got this picture, because there are similar animals that existed many years ago that are you can confuse with trilobites. But these are trilobites, as far as I know. Not that it makes that big of a difference. But the point is, these are creatures that sometime in the past died and were covered with sediment, and that sediment turned into rock. So you have these impressions or these fossilized bodies of trilobites. And so what we see here in the fossil record, which is all over the world, there's billions and multiple billions of fossils, some even think trillions of fossils in the world. You just got to know where to dig. And most places you do dig, in a lot of places you'll find some kind of fossil, depending on the kinds of rock you're looking at. So this fossil record, really, if you look at it in a careful way, is what I like to call Earth's historical record of life. You can't go to a book and look up Earth's historical record because the books could be wrong. But the Earth and its collection of fossils shows you what kind of animals existed. And it can't be wrong because there it is. You can't argue with the fact that was a creature that lived many years ago. It's Earth's historical record of life. It's going to show us some things. As God wants us to look around at this creation and by looking at it, be able to tell that it's obvious He's God and our Creator, this is one place you can look, and you'll see why in just a bit. The fossil record tells us a lot. It's a record that can only be found in the ground, not somewhere, some book. It's a record of most creatures living today. You won't find everything that lives today in the fossil record because it's not an absolute perfect record, but it records most of the things living today that have died in the past and become fossils. And it also records most creatures that are no longer living today, things that are extinct, like this trilobite. So, you want to know what actually lived in this world? Become a paleontologist. That's a famous, unused word that we don't use a lot, that talks about people who dig in the ground to find fossils. That's all a paleontologist is. It'll come up quite a bit in some of the things that we look at. You can study fossils. Some people spend their whole adult life looking for fossils. Okay, it's a record for life. How did they get there in the ground like that? How do we get billions and billions of animals that died and recovered and turned, and then are now encased in rock that we can dig up and say, hey, look, hey, there's something called a trilobite, or I'll give it a name, trilobite. You can call it something else if you want. How did they get there? That's the question, and we're going to see. Let me go ahead and move. Evolutionists believe that over the period of time that they say life existed on this earth, which is about 3.5 billion years, they claim, the first cellular life came into existence, and then millions of years for more complicated life forms. They claim it happened with this kind of a process. Through all time on earth, when the first life came into existence, things like fish and other animals that aren't in this picture would die, and they would either fall into the water or into a bog or into a swamp or into some, you've heard it, some tar pit. You name it, just whatever it is, and they would pretty soon be covered by sediment. Their flesh most times would melt away, but their bones would be preserved because the sediment would keep out the air. And the sediment then would form more layers, and they'd be buried until over time the bottom layers turned into rock, and here are these poor guys encased in the rock. This is a process that happened continually as long as life existed, is what their claim is, through these billions of years. And that's why we have fossils. Okay, so it's a continuous process they're claiming. People who believe in creation, again, you may not have thought about it too much, believe the way that most fossils exist is because of the flood that we read about in Genesis. Here you have a world full of living things. And how many of the entire world, great population, were saved by the ark? Anybody remember? 8 souls. And then 2 of each kind of animal were brought onto the ark. The rest in this terribly graphic picture were destroyed by the flood. All the animals, all the things, sea creatures, some of them were destroyed. Some of them probably survived because they could breathe in water. But all the other creatures were destroyed and buried immediately, within a year, in a whole bunch of sediment. And that finally, after pressure and time, turned into rock, and there we have the fossils. Now, we're not going to talk about which is more likely to happen in preserving a fossil. I have my theories that really a flood like this is much better at preserving fossils than a gradual animals falling into lakes and rivers and dying in sediment. But we won't go there. Just simply so you see that these are the two main explanations. Evolution believes it all happened over vast lengths of time. Creationists pretty much, we believe it happened, the Genesis flood. Fossils have formed other ways too, but primarily through this way. Okay. If that's the case, you got these two choices, evolution's theory, creation, what it says very clearly. What do you expect to see in the fossil record? Think here with me, because it's very important. Evolution expects to see something like this. Different creatures, all these wonderful creatures that we see today, and ones that are extinct, existing, and that from that original blob of protoplasm that came into existence, that first germ of life, from there, these branches are transitional species of creatures that change and change and change when one into another until the on the left side here, oh, there's a fern, and then the fern mutates some ways, and then all bunch of transition. All the orange lines are not just lines, they're different variations that have happened over millions of years, and you should be able to find all these changes between the distinct kinds of animals that there are, and you should find these in the fossil record. Now, this is important to understand. Let's look real quick and make sure that you all are understanding. This is what you'd expect to see in creation. Distinct kinds of animals with no branches of fossils that show that there's a common ancestor to a gorilla and a man. There's no evidence of that. Or between a fish and tetrapods, which are animals that walk on the ground. Or between birds and dinosaurs. You're not going to find that because God made dinosaurs and he made birds, the bird kind, and he made the cow kind. And he didn't have them come out of each other. He just made them. evolution states that the fossil record should show all these transitions between these different kinds of animals because they all evolved from one source in the beginning. This basic blob of life that came into existence by accident. From that point, the trunk goes out and all these creatures that come into existence that we see today, and those that aren't here today, should have slowly progressed through this slowly changing process of mutation and natural selection till we have the creatures that we know about. Okay, does anybody have a question about that? Is that confusing in any way, the differences that we should see in the fossil record? Creationist view is going to say, well, we're only going to find fossils of different kinds. We're not going to find any transitions because it never happened. Evolutionists are going to say, no, the fossil record should be full of transitional species between different kinds of life because it all evolves slowly. Mike.
One of the assumptions of evolution is that as we go up this ladder or this tree of life, if you want to call it, we should see increasing complexity.
And, yes, that's true.
And yet, if we look at this, all of the things up there are incredibly complex. All of them are perfectly designed and function within the environment that they're situated in. So it just doesn't cry out that there has been this change and gradual transition from one to the other when they all, have lived and functioned and, Some have become extinct, but that's even going on today, and that's not an argument necessarily for evolution. That's an argument for the fact that animals and plants have a life cycle, and after that, they pass out.
The argument there they would give is that we do. Of course, today we see all the sophisticated life forms because it's had millions of years to evolve, and so let's just give them that possibility. The thing is, where does the historical record of life, which you find where? The fossil record. Where does it show all this transitions of change from these less complicated, let's say, creatures to more complicated and more complicated till we have us today? Show us that. There should be millions and millions of examples. We're going to talk about just a few, and that's the only few that they'll suggest because there's none. The ones that we're talking about, we're going to see, don't hold any water. So, what you need to see then is, okay, well, the Bible, the earth shows the Bible is accurate when it said that all things were made after their kind and would reproduce after their kind, and that's what we see in the Bible, which is the inspired record of God, and the record in the fossils. All things are made after their kind. There is no transitions between anything. That's all... just made up. It's imagination. It's wishful thinking by people who don't want to recognize there's a God in many cases. Not every case. Many cases. Yes, Terry.
One thing I've always thought is, how could it ever stop? It would be open-ended. It doesn't matter the years go by. Every living creature has the potential to split and split and split.
Yes.
And we see defined species.
We do.
And something like that would be so open-ended, it would be just continuous.
Exactly. And here's the argument made, which that's what I say. You don't really see things transitioning into other things today, but what they're saying is that you are looking at it in one little point of time. Actually, in 23 million years, your head's going to be this big. And maybe you'll grow another arm or something because it's more useful. That's kind of what their argument would be. And so I think it's a crazy argument, but the reality is what you need to do and see is we don't know exactly what's happening in the world today, what's evolving according to their idea, but what we do see is the fossil record. Does it show us any of these transitions? Does it show us a constant changing life of things turning one thing into another and advancing? That's the question. And we should look at that. And I don't know exactly why God preserved things as fossils, but I know one thing. that it is great evidence for what for the flood and for Genesis 1 and 2, the creation of things after their kind. It's a tremendous evidence that supports creation. It's amazing, actually. Sam.
You mentioned their main explanation is in between the different branches of evolution, there's millions and millions of years, you know, 10 million, 60 million years in between, because it requires a lot of time for there to be the chance, right? And so they say it's different times in history, different events that have affected what we see in the fossil record, right? The extinction of dinosaurs, right? Mm-hmm. The different eras, like Cambrian era, which is before them, and stuff like that. They said these are great moments in time where not only did evolution change the species, but the previous species was eradicated, mm-hmm. right? And so something like that you have on the screen, the coelacanth up there, the fish in the bottom right, mm-hmm. is they say, well, that animal is way older than the dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. So over millions and millions of years, of course it's changed, right? Of course, it's got that much amount of time, anything's going to change, right? It's one of the things they say, or it goes extinct, right? Mm-hmm. But as you probably will show them, it's not the case.
Yeah, we'll talk about the coelacanth that's not extinct. Actually, people have known that story. They thought it was for a number of years, but it's not. Okay, appreciate that, Sam. Yep.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The other comment is that that's one of the main reasons why they say life started, you know, billions of years ago. And it's typically that time zone that they say is typically increasing as the years go by. And they need more and more and more time.
More time, yep.
For there to be a chance for it to work at all.
More time, so much so that now one of the most popular theories among evolutionary biologists and theorists is that there's not enough time in this universe for things to evolve the way that they could by chance. So there's actually a multitude of universes, the multiverse. And so you've got all these universes out there, and we just happen to be the lucky one that got it right. That's a different story. We'll talk about that maybe a little later, just a bit. But because it's so unlikely like something like this would happen. But again, zooming in on what we're looking at right now, what does the fossil record show? Does it show what evolution requires, or does it show what creation teaches, distinct kinds without any transitional species? Okay, is that clear what the difference is between those two? Because that's important as we go ahead. We're going to look at some specific examples. Mike.
And just for clarity, the fossil record doesn't contain those little lines going to
it doesn't. No, what it contains, what we're going to see, there's no fossils there. But what evolution requires is that all along these lines are little creatures changing. Okay, this one changed into this, and then along here, and this became a fern. We should have all these creatures in the fossil record, at least most of them, or some of them. So, if they exist, they should be there. Because over these millions and millions of years, and not just the ones that are fully formed, distinct creatures.
Those lines are no more valid than a Milton Bradley board game that children play with the little lines on it. It's strictly a human invention.
You play those games, do you?
I do.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Sometimes I win when I play the right child.
Yeah, good to know. Okay, we'll go ahead. If it's not clear, we'll bring it up again here. But this is the two different explanations. Let's look at our first example. This is one of the creatures that, when is the date of this guy? I'll see if we have a date here. That was discovered, let me see. Here's an artist's conception. Let's go back. A fossil of a Archaeopteryx. Say that fast 10 times in a row. It's a fossil of a creature that looks like a bird. Evolutionists say it's got some similarities to dinosaurs, and therefore it is the transitional fossil between birds and dinosaurs, which is what the theory of evolution, most evolutionists believe birds back in ages ago, millions of years ago, evolved into dinosaurs. And we, of course, still have birds too, but a common ancestor to birds evolved into dinosaurs and then also evolved into birds. I don't have any, well, that graph or that picture of those creatures, I didn't have any dinosaurs on that picture, but okay, let's talk about this guy. Again, these artist conceptions, we're going to have some fun with those. They don't know exactly what the guy looked like, but they'll paint a picture and say, this is what we think this guy looked like. All right. Well, what's the evidence about this? They say this is the creature that combines feathers and skeletal structures peculiar to birds with features of dinosaurs, including teeth. Okay. Now, let's see. That's not working either. Hold on a second. We'll get this back. And so they are claiming that this is evidence that birds evolved, I'm sorry, from dinosaurs. I was explaining it backwards. Evolved from dinosaurs, okay? The dinosaurs, some of them they have a common ancestor that evolved into birds. I was explaining that backwards. Okay, is this really evidence? And it clearly isn't. And here's the reason why, and we'll look into it a little bit here. This particular animal had fully formed flying feathers, including asymmetric veins, that's a part of what a feather is made of in a modern bird today, and ventral, and reinforcing furrows, all the common things that you'd see in a bird, as modern flying birds. Had classical elliptical wings of modern woodland birds and a large wishbone for the attachment of muscles. Okay, so this Archaeopteryx was a bird. The fact that it had teeth is irrelevant to its alleged transitional status. A number of extinct birds had teeth, and no one is claiming that they are transitional from dinosaurs. And while a number of reptiles do not have teeth, so you haven't proven anything here that this is a transitional species. You're suggesting. They're saying, this is what we think. Hey, we found the missing link between dinosaurs and birds. Like other birds, both its upper jaw and lower jaw move. Again, it's a bird. In most vertebrates, including reptiles, only the lower jaw moves. So it doesn't have that feature that dinosaurs had. Alan Fiducia, a world authority on birds at the North University of Carolina and an evolutionist, says, paleontologists have tried to turn Archaeopteryx into an earth-bound feathered dinosaur, but it's not. It is a bird, a perching bird, and no amount of paleobabble is going to change that. Paleontologist trying to figure out some way to make this a transitional form. This guy says it's obvious, and he believes in evolution. So this is not the missing link between dinosaurs and birds. It's a bird. It perches and acts like a bird, has wings like a bird. It's a bird. Another evolutionist, Lecomte du Moy, he says, we are not even authorized to consider the exceptional case of our Archaeopteryx as a true link. By link, we mean a necessary stage of transition between classes such as reptiles and birds, or between smaller groups. He continues to say, an animal displaying characteristics belonging to two different groups cannot be treated as a true link as long as the intermediary stages have not been found, and as long as the mechanism of transition remains unknown. We don't have enough evidence. This is an interesting bird, is what he's saying here. Another evolutionist, A.J. Marshall, writing in Biology and Comparative Physiology of Birds, says the origin of birds is largely a matter of deduction. There is no fossil of the stages through which the remarkable change from reptile to bird was achieved. Again, evolutionists, these guys being, look, we're stepping way out of bounds here. This fossil of this weird bird is not evidence of a link between dinosaurs and birds. We need so much more evidence to show that. We can't come out here and say that we found this missing link, is basically what they're saying. Okay, there's one example of stretching what's there because they're looking for something to support a theory that there's, as far as the fossil record goes, there's so very little anything in there to support what you should see in the rocks beneath the ground. Okay, here's a classic case. Fossil record in horses. This chart, or one like it, which I know you can't really read what's on here very well, very common in a lot of literature for many years, especially in textbooks for children and in colleges, And it proposedly shows the evolution of a horse, beginning with this creature called a higher Corinth or Don horse, which evolved into Micopus, a more advanced horse so many million years later, which then evolved into Merychippus, a little more advanced than that, and then Equus, and then finally to a modern thoroughbred. There you got a ghosted gray there that is all. This is the transition. This is the picture they show. This is what we know. We believe this happened. And we think these fossils show this evidence as here's the evolution of a horse. A great example of evolution is how it was put forth there and just preached and preached, and I mean preached, for years. The gospel is not the only thing that can be preached, and it needs to be preached. Evolution is preached fervently in educational systems. Okay, let's look at this. Here it says, an evolutionary history of the modern horse, Microsoft Encarta. It's kind of like the Encyclopedia Britannica, but it's a digital version. It says, the horse is a well-documented case study in evolution. The fossil record shows clear steps in the progression from a four-toed, small browsing animal. This is the claim. It's being made. Okay. Well, most evolutionists believe now, after years and years of this being the facts, they believe now that Equus was likely not related to horses at all, but to modern conies. So completely not in the horse line at all, but into these little critters called conies, which I've never seen one, but you can look them up. They're cute little things. Yeah, so we were wrong about this, is what they're saying. Fossils of Miohippus and Merychippus and Equus have been found together with modern horses in the same strata at a number of sites around the world. Now, what does that mean? If you've got supposed preliminary versions that extinct long ago, current with horses in the fossil record living at the same time, then you know that they're not transitional forms to that later version. They're current, they're just different kinds of creatures that lived the same time horses did many years ago. They all lived together at the same time. You got all different kinds of horses. Modern horses vary enormously in size. The largest is the Clydesdale. If you go to the fair, you'll see the Clydesdales. And you also see these little guys there. You ever watch the have little chariot performances where you've got Clydesdales and these little pulling the chariots around, and then little guys. These small Falabella horses, which stand 43 inches, have a lot of variety of horses. Just give an example here of a few things, and we'll make some conclusion remarks about horse evolution. Okay, let's look at this chart. We've got an eland, the gnu, the bushback, the gazelle, the dik-dik. Although the animals here form a series, anybody can put them up on a chart like this. It is not an evolutionary series. Why not? You tell me. Anybody have any idea? Why is not this not an evolutionary series? Be brave. Speak up. What?
They all exist today.
They all exist today. They're just different variations of the antelope. And so even though I can put them on a chart like this and say, whoo, doesn't this look like an evolutionary series? No. They're animals that live today. Okay, let's look at a few quotations from evolutionists. Niles Eldridge, interviewed in Darwin's Enigma, said, I admit that an awful lot of that imagery or stories have gotten into the textbooks as though it were true. Oh, man. It got in there and it shouldn't have, because it didn't really happen, or it wasn't really accurate. He says, for instance, the most famous example on the horse evolution prepared perhaps 50 years ago that has been presented as literal truth in textbook after textbook. This is still him talking. Now I think that is lamentable, particularly because the people who propose these kinds of stories themselves may be aware of the speculative nature of some of the stuff, but by the time it filters down to the textbooks, we've got science as truth and we've got a problem. And I'm not sure exactly what he means there, but he said, we've foisted a picture, this whole thing upon people and said, this is evidence for evolution. And really, it's not at all evidence for evolution. Boyce Rosenberger, evolutionary author, The popularly told example of horse evolution, suggesting a gradual sequence of changes from four-toed fox-sized creatures living 50 million years ago to today's much larger one-toed horse, has long known to be wrong. Bet you can find it in some textbooks today if you go out and look for one. It's still there. And many of it was when I was younger. I remember something just like this, because it illustrates something that people believe and they want to preach it so badly, even though it's not accurate, even though it doesn't account for what the fossil record shows or any kind of acceptable today transition between within a particular kind of horse. He continues saying, instead of gradual change, fossils of each intermediate species appear fully distinct, persist unchanged, and then become extinct. Transitional forms are unknown. Transitional forms are unknown. What do you have to have if evolution is true? What do you have to have in the fossil record? Transitional forms. Encyclopedia of Evolution, Richard Milner, Marsh's horse evolution, this is the first guy that came up with the whole theory, is still presented as fact to students today. A fossil exhibition was staged at the American Museum of Natural History. The exhibit is now hidden from public view as an outdated embarrassment. Now, wouldn't it be great if just as broadly and loudly that the media claims, okay, here we found this horse evolution, and this is an example, wouldn't it be great that if so many years later when it was found out to be just a farce, that they would come out and say, oh, this whole this stuff about the evolution of the horse, strike that off. You don't hardly ever read any of this stuff being recanted when it's found out to be false, to be inaccurate. You can go and read these guys writing to each other and in journals, but you won't see it in the media. Almost a century later, paleontologist George Gaylord Simpson re-examined horse evolution and concluded that generations of students had been misled. There's no evidence in the fossils for horses evolving. Should never have been put this down this way. Misled that many people for so long. Okay, we don't have time. We got about 18 minutes after. We're going to look at this guy next week. Tiktaalik, the supposed fossil of the transition between fish and land animals. We're going to take a real close look at that and just see if it holds up. Is this guy really the transitional form, which you got to have in the fossil record if evolution is true? Any comments or questions before we close? Mike?
Yeah, after, you know, the scientific examination of the scientific experts has been presented, it's much like a court case where somebody gets up and refutes the expert witness and shows how corrupt and you know untruthful he's been. Mm-hmm. And in such an instance, they would find that individual not guilty, or they would find, you know, that individual not guilty because of the unreliability of the testimony. And in like manner, you know, there really is no other conclusion that we can reach other than that it's unreliable and false when we look at these different things.
We know what it is for things to get political. Evolution is very political in the education circles. Very political. You buy in or you if you don't buy in, then you're not in. And that's unfortunate. And that's the way it is in our government, in our nation, the political things that we have going on that have been, and that's the way it is. And so you got to look and examine and study and cut through, you know, what's proposed and examine it and find out if it's true or not. Horse evolution, just a big farce. They were so wanting to find some kind of transitional species that they drew those pictures and said, look what we got. It was all just staged. Mike.
Yeah, the prime mover of evolution is truly the fact that God is not in the picture with
yes.
evolution.
Yeah.
And the secular world doesn't want to acknowledge God's existence.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's a lot. That's a lot of it. Most of it, and therefore we're not accountable to anything or anyone. Which of course we are. We're accountable to a great and wonderful God, and we're going to take a break for 10 minutes and get back and worship Him from our hearts and with our voices. Thank you for your attention today and your participation.